Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy customizable themes that let you build your brand. Marketing tools that get your products out there, and that's just the beginning. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go. Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you. Shopify, your all-in-one commerce platform.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com.au/listen.
You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Coming up, inflation cools. What does it mean for interest rates and how did the market react? All of that and more next. Everyone, welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Wednesday, the 24th of June, 2026. It's a day where the Australian share market rose, the 200 up by 0.24%. We'll have the details with Todd Hoare soon from LGT Wealth Management. But first, there's been a welcome fall in Australia's inflation rate, but it doesn't mean the Reserve Bank may be done lifting interest rates. The annual headline rate eased from 4.2% to 4% in May. But the underlying rate, which strips out one-off variables like huge swings in petrol prices, rose to 3.6%. Now, the ABS says that rate can give more insights into how inflation is trending, and it's the one the Reserve Bank cares about. Either way, both are still above the RBA's 2 to 3% target band. For more, I spoke with David Bassanese, the chief economist at BetaShares. David, so inflation has eased the headline rate, but the underlying rate rose. So is this a good or a bad result?
Well, I'd like to say it was a good result. Certainly, petrol prices coming down in the month is nice. They're still above where they were before the war in Iran began. But unfortunately, the bad news today is that underlying inflation, according to the trim mean measure, is still pretty sticky. It was up 0.4% in the month, and the annual rate rising from 3.4% to 3.6%.
Let's go into detail about that underlying measure, because the ABS made a point today of explaining the wild moves in petrol prices and why it's excluded from the underlying rate. So that petrol price up 33% in March, then down 8 and 12% in the following month. So that shows the volatility, right? Can I get your take? Once this is stripped out, what does it say about inflation and perhaps how these costs are being passed on to businesses and consumers? Are we starting to see the secondary effects there?
Yeah, we are. I mean, that's why economists and the Reserve Bank focus on what's called the trim mean measure. It basically, in each month, it strips out the most volatile price changes, both on the upside and the downside. And the trim mean measure showed a 0.4% monthly increase. So if you annualise that, it's still well above the RBA's 2 to 3% target rate. And what that is showing is that, you know, underlying inflation is still sticky, and plus the flow through of the higher oil prices since the war in Iran is just adding to that upward pressure, at least in the short run. So we saw, for example, you know, restaurant takeaway meals, they were pretty firm in the month. Now there's, food costs, transport costs that are probably feeding through into that area. We also saw not so much related to the war in Iran, but housing, construction and rent costs are also still pretty firm. And I think, you know, one of the issues is with the budget is actually going to maybe add to inflationary pressures in those areas because it's going to tighten the rental market. So rents may go up. And to the extent that it's increasing the demand for new housing, it's going to add to upward pressure on new house prices, you know, what developers can charge for new housing construction now, given that investors are going to be, moving into that market rather than the established market.
And speaking of housing then, this data comes as the economy slows. Established house prices are starting to ease. These prices aren't necessarily directly included in the CPI. So combined, what does this mean for the outlook for interest rates if inflation is still above that RBA 2 to 3% target band on both measures?
Yeah, well, look, my base case is the RBA won't raise rates again this year. I think we're done having raised rates three times already, though the bias I think is if is that there is still a risk they do need to do more if inflation remains as sticky as it is at the moment. But I think one of the reasons we may not get that rate rise is that the economy is starting to slow. Consumer spending is slowing, the housing market is slowing, and that should combine along with, hopefully low, even lower oil prices to bring down inflation by year end.
That's David Bassanese there, the chief economist at Beta Shares. Let's take a look at the share market reaction now. The S&P ASX 200 up 0.24%, gaining ground after the data was released by the ABS. The tech sector did best, but investors were attracted to defensive names, especially in healthcare and utilities. And the Australian dollar hit an 11-week low against the US at 69.11, but that's on rising US interest rate expectations. For more, I spoke with Todd Hoare. He's the head of public markets at LGT Wealth Management. Todd, first of all, how did the market react to the mixed inflation result, and are investors still expecting more rate rises to come?
So it's a very, very good question. I think RBA Governor Bullock, she went to great lengths at her last press conference to really make sure the focus was on underlying inflation. And so that's where most of the investment world was focused today. So you're obviously going to see plenty of comments about that headline print, but really it's that trimmed mean, which came in at 3.6%, obviously above expectations. That's where the real focus is. It certainly didn't give the all clear for the end of a hiking cycle. So another rate rise is clearly a live possibility. But at the end of the day, or at the end of right now, the market hasn't really changed its stance a great deal. Investors are still divided on where the next hike, the next move might be rather. It's basically 50-50 for another hike. If we look at the internals of the market, the Aussie dollar was a little changed, about 69 cents. Bond yields hadn't really moved a great deal. The equity market was largely unchanged. So the market's taken it well in its stride, hasn't really recalibrated expectations a great deal, which might mean that perhaps the focus is going to shift to that employment data later this week. But I think for now, the RBA's probably paused, in inverted commas, just to assess the transmission of their prior rate hikes. But that doesn't mean that they're done. And I think today's data certainly didn't give the all clear that you can make that call.
I guess the upcoming reporting season will be really interesting to see how the secondary effects are being passed through from the Middle East to the economy here and now to the company's bottom lines. Are you starting to see any evidence from companies?
I think investors are certainly vigilant to these second round effects. It's the right question to be asking, but we're not really seeing it in terms of the data. So when we look at actual company announcements, when we look at updates, we're not seeing that. And maybe that's not surprising because I guess the issues in the Middle East have ebbed and flowed. Oil has come back a fair way, and there is a transmission mechanism. There is a lag, probably in the order of about 4 to 6 months for these costs to pass through. So if we are going to see it, it's probably a bit too soon. We may start to see some comments come through in the August results. But what we are seeing, I think, beneath the surface is you are seeing investors position themselves a little bit more defensively with that in mind. So if we look at earnings, for example, it's really only the energy sector, as you would imagine, that has seen earnings upgrades over the past 3 months. Just about every other sector in Australia is seeing downgrades. And if we actually look at positioning in Australia at a sector level, healthcare stocks, which are viewed as one of the more defensive parts of the market, they've been performing well. Consumer staple stocks like Woolies and Coles have done really, really well. And even in parts of the consumer discretionary space, it's really those defensive names like lotteries and gaming that have done quite well. So I think earnings and positioning suggest that investors are awake and are vigilant to those second order effects. But in terms of actually seeing it in the data, whether that was today's inflation print or in terms of company announcements, we haven't quite seen it yet.
Can I get your take on AI? There's been a lot of volatility in the space and technology in recent days. Yesterday, the Korean Kospi was smashed, I think, down around 10%. Yes, it is up 90% so far this year, though. The Nikkei was also pretty hit. Those are pretty highly leveraged to technology stocks. The technology-based NASDAQ was hit in the US overnight. What's your take on the space?
Well, I think your framing's spot on there, Ricardo, and I'm glad you actually mentioned that the KOSPI was up 90%. They have had a tremendous run, and it's really been led by just a handful of stocks. In fact, two stocks, Samsung and SK Hynix, just as this AI and this semiconductor trade flowed beyond the confines of the US. But Korean equities were up about, you mentioned 90% year to date. That's a big number, but they're up 40% on a rolling 1 month basis. And if we go back through the last 30 odd years of data, they're the types of returns that you only really see coming out of the Asian financial crisis, coming out of the GFC. Not even COVID was that strong. And so when we look at the magnitude of that return, and then you have a look at the internals of that return over the last, say, 6 or 7 days, about 70% of the KOSPI stocks were actually falling. And so it was being built on really fragile foundations at a time where margin debt had exploded, up about probably 40% year to date. And the real catalyst, I guess, the trigger was some speculation that maybe Korea might introduce a capital gains tax on unrealized gains. And that was really the catalyst for the KOSPI sell-off. In terms of what that might mean for the Nikkei or for the NASDAQ, again, you've seen the NASDAQ up about 30% over the past couple of months. That's a big return. You've got to go back to COVID to see that magnitude of return in a short space of time. And then prior to that, the GFC and the dot-com bubble. So you've seen very, very strong performance come at a time where we're starting to ask question on the costs of these large language model tokens and budgets to run these models. You've got a slightly more hawkish Fed as well. And markets have become a little bit concentrated and almost euphoric to some extent. So seeing a pullback of some magnitude is probably not that surprising, albeit it's a bit jarring. But in Korea, for example, we've seen high single digit falls a couple of times this year already.
So with everything we've just discussed then, what are you telling your clients right now, and where do you see the opportunities for investors?
Well, we're still on this broadening trade. And so I guess what we mean by that is that we think that there's a number of places that you can find appropriate investments. It might not quite feel like that, given how concentrated some of the markets have become and where returns are being driven. But if you actually have a look at performance year to date, you can actually see that equities outside of the US have actually outperformed US equities, which would probably surprise a few people. Small and mid-cap companies are actually outperforming large-cap companies. So I know obviously the Mag 7 and the big companies in Korea, and then obviously SpaceX, they get all of the focus. But it's those small and mid-cap companies that are actually beating their large cap peers. Obviously, everyone is very focused on growth and that cohort or that style, but value stocks have done just as well as growth stocks. So I guess our message hasn't changed a great deal, and that is there's plenty of places to find investments and attractive investment opportunities. We don't just have to be indexed. We just don't have to be large cap, and we don't have to be US. And it is more than just an AI trade.
That's Todd Hall there from LGT Wealth Management, and he wraps up the podcast for this Wednesday. Give it a like, review, and subscribe if you enjoy it. And don't forget, you can watch On the Money during the 6:30 weekday edition of SBS World News on SBS. The podcast returns tomorrow. It drops after the market close every weekday, and I'll catch you then.
This SBS On the Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only and should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and it does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decisions. This SBS On the Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. Content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances.
Hi, it's Noor Haider, one of the hosts of The Guardian's daily news podcast, Full Story. Every weekday, we bring you a single story, going beyond the headlines and taking you closer to The Guardian's journalism. Combining personal storytelling with analysis, we take you inside the stories that matter most. For fearless, independent reporting that holds power to account, listen to Full Story from The Guardian, wherever you get your podcasts.